Welcome to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like geography, visual arts, the performing arts, and storytelling and literature. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
We're joined on this program by Dr. Lee Francis from Laguna Pueblo, the CEO and founder of Native Realities. Some of his current projects include running Red Planet Comics and organizing global events like Indigenous Comic-Con and Indigipop X. As the head Indigenerd, Lee is dedicated to changing the perceptions and representations of Indigenous people in and through popular culture.
Lee, let's talk a little bit about how you do the work that you do. And most people, when they think about comics, think about what you were talking about as a kid. You go to the drugstore and there's the rack of Archies or X-Men or whatever. But you also do a lot of digital publishing. Do you find digital versus print has a different reach or a different audience?
They're very much two different mediums. And it's one of the things that we've been trying to explore. Well, I guess my generation is the transition world because we were there at the rise of the internet, but we also know a world before the internet, I guess Gen X, right? What we've run into is this interesting space in terms of the industry where we've tried to take analog solutions, analog experiences, and make them digital. And it's this, square into the round hole, the square peg into the round hole.
That would be like turning pages of a comic book online. It's still just a bunch of static images.
Right. And the difference between scrolling, using your finger on a tablet versus holding a book in your hand. Right. And I think that when a lot of folks and a lot of players came in and were trying to digitize everything, digital archives, very important. We're saving it for a future generation, at least in the electronic sense. I think physical, archiving is still very, very important as well, because you don't know when the computers are going to go offline and or rise up against us and steal all our knowledge. But we were doing these very interesting things in distance learning and e-learning, where we were just using the same model as a classroom base, but trying to shove it into an online system. And then you're going to carry on conversations, quote unquote, online, in this particular style. But there's a difference. We know that a conversation in person has a lot to do with facial recognition and emotional connections. And one of my friends put it very succinctly before. He says, when you get online, you're not having a conversation, you're monologuing.
Right.
You're essentially monologuing, and then someone responds to your monologue. And then you're monologuing back. You're not having a conversation. A conversation is between two humans. So I think what we tried to do is, I like holding a comic. I think it's really important. And what we're thinking about, when I think about that, it's creating an artifact. So what I want to create is something that is tangible that you want to carry with you. Comic collectors, for whatever reasons, there are ones that they value and that are valuable because of the memories that are associated with that. You don't have the same with digital memories. Digital memories are much more ephemeral. And so if that's the case, then we have to start adapting to that medium. And so you create digital-based experiences. We're starting to work on some really cool stuff that has to do with scrolling. So when you're scrolling up, it changes the picture. And so it becomes a little more animated and a little bit more engaging in terms of the storytelling that can only be accomplished when you scroll up or scroll left, right. Not taking an analog approach and then putting it digital. And I had a great conversation with a scholar over in Australia about how are we creating these types of artifacts for folks and what are we wanting to generate with that, because that experience is very, very important. It's the same with game playing, right? You've got game playing like this, but when you think about digital games, you all are focused on one point in front of you, right?
And by this, everybody, he's moving his thumbs around on a controller.
Right. So by this, but your attention and focus is you are focused ahead at a specific point. You're not interacting. I tend to be more of a fan of analog tabletop games because you can have a similar game play, you can still be competitive, it can still be whatever, but you have to look at a person across the way from you. There's a whole generation that operates differently. And this new generation, my son's generation, operates very much in a digital realm. But I still don't know if we've adapted entirely the digital experience to fully explore that.
Well, I think your language is really the clue there, because I think for digital or immersive augmented reality, virtual reality experiences with which these massive online multiplayer games are, in a sense, those are experiences. They're not artifacts.
Right.
You know, and they have this component that you don't actually always get with a tabletop game, which is that extreme sort of immersion in another space altogether. Like I used to play Dungeons and Dragons. So that was a great thing, but it was essentially hanging out with your friends.
Yeah.
I mean, in the end,
that was it. That's
it was
what
it a lot was. Of it was a lot of eye contact and our voices. It wasn't the same as total immersion in this
world,
alternate reality that had physical sensations and had audiovisual components. And I think that's really the place to key it. Are you all working on any kind of purely immersive experiences,
both digital and analog? Yes, we are. Yeah. So there's a piece that we're working on called Electric Chaco. So it's a Pueblo Futurisms or Pueblo steampunk, where we imagine that Chaco Canyon was not ravaged by environmental factors 1,000 years ago.
I love this.
And instead continued on its trajectory. But I like to imagine like an alt timeline trajectory where we go a little more steampunk, and it continued to build up and be the center of the Southwest, right? And it was, you know, and shiny technology and all the rest of that stuff. And then something happens and there is an environmental something, and the people there at Electric Chaco are super like highly engaged technologists and whatever. And then they're trying to figure out what they do next. Okay. So we're trying to build that out as something that's immersive, you know, think of Meow Wolf style immersive art experience where these realities start to blend, and something that also engages digitally. So it's real life plus.
I really enjoyed the Electric Chaco installation at Indigenous Comic-Con. Yeah. And one of the things that struck me about it, besides that it was really cool, is that there were spaces for participants and for conference attendees to do their own visioning.
Yes.
To share their words or their thoughts or their hopes creatively, abstractly, in words and pictures. And so will you have that sort of interactive element as well?
Yes, we want, that's a big thing that we want to continue. And if we've talked to with Meow Wolf, because they're partners on this, as we've talked with them about that, it's one of the big things that we've now put this Electric Chaco up at four locations at this point. People are signing their names, they're writing things. Things are really, you know, like things that are really hopeful. It's been incredible. People aren't scratching stuff out or writing over other people. Everybody's getting their space and their time for their own words. And so that was pretty instructive for how we want to go forward with this, is we want to keep that spirit of people coming by, because that's also sort of the underlying part about Electric Chaco, is, you know, that it's built by the people.
So you mentioned that Meow Wolf is going to be one of your partners for Indigipop X.
Yeah, we are a brand under Meow Wolf. So we have been brought into the Meow Wolf fold. So we have our Native Realities sub-brand that's a part of that, a Native Realities family, right? We're going to continue doing what we're doing around this, building around these, experiences, and kind of tying all these stories in together to create this more immersive space around Native identity and existence. And so we're going to be able to have the expertise that Meow Wolf brings and their experience in putting a lot of this stuff together. And I'm just been overjoyed. I was like, oh, we get to do some really cool storytelling now. And hopefully weave in some of our stories into what they're doing, you know, trying to make some of these strategic decisions from what we're doing is like, how do we build this into? So now there's going to be some of these very interesting components within the Native or in the Meow Wolf experience that unfold a different line of the story that they're telling.
You're bringing these kind of experiences to your con.
Mm-hmm.
And also you said you had it at some other events.
Yeah. The most recent was at Somos, our downtown music and arts festival. We had it out on the plaza, which was really great with the Somos folks. They reached out to us and were like, what can you guys do? And I was like, we can bring Electric Chaco. And actually that was one of those experiences where it was like, it wasn't Native folks. We had to leave. So we had to pack up. I don't know. It was like 10 o'clock at night. So we're trying to pack up. We're trying to take it down, and people are still trying to sign, like literally as we're taking it down. And that was such a beautiful reflection for me about folks that, you know, are so wanting to be a part of this. They're still, we're like, we're going to drop stuff on your head if you don't move. Please hurry up. And we took it up to Denver because we had our Indigenous Papa X up in Denver in July. And then we'll have something new, I think, for the expo that's coming up. It may be the same thing, but again, we're trying to like minimize some of the cracking that's starting to happen because we've taken it out of storage and put it back in storage. Joe Stacy, who's the one that did all of the art on the outside of that for us, he's been building some other cool, amazing, interactive, immersive pieces. So we're going to be showcasing some more of his stuff coming up pretty soon.
That kind of work seems like the best of both worlds, given what we were talking about. You've got your artifact, which it seems appeals to you, and you've got your experience.
And your experience, yep. Think about when you go to like the best museum or you go to the best, you know, whatever. And I know this from my days when I was a poet and a performer. You go and see a poet perform and then you buy their book. It's an artifact, but it's a memento. You're buying a memento of the experience that you had.
It's a keepsake.
It's a keepsake, right? It's not necessarily that I'm going to go back and read that book over and over again. I've seen plenty of poets and some of them, that, you know, like with just little chapbook, right? They staple that stuff in half. It's a zine, which is really beautiful. But I keep it up on my shelf because when I go back through, I'm like, oh my gosh. Yeah. So we want to do the same thing as like, oh my gosh, I had this experience at Electric Chaco and I got a map or I got a token or I got a, you know, a little booklet or something, you know, that tells this story.
Which I think is a nice way to bring in something that we were talking about in one of the earlier breaks, which is cosplay, which is a nice physical artifact-based experience. It seems like given what Comic-Cons can be like, I would presume gratifying to you to have people show up in cosplay as one of their favorite heroes from one of your comic books. Yep. Or from one of your stories. Have you had that happen?
Yeah, it's been great. And even just, you know, folks showing up as kind of native characters. We had, last year, we had a kid come as John Redcorn from King of the Hill, because one of our longtime guests is Jonathan Joss, who was the voice of John Redcorn on King of the Hill. It was fabulous, right? We've had some of our more professional cosplayers. We've had Desba Rose, who does, you know, who was just showcased at IAI at Indian Market for her cosplay pieces. The first year we did this, she came as a Navajo Rey from Star Wars. By your existence as a cosplayer, you are showcasing that you can't be put into this native world. It's also not ceremony, so you're not dressing up in regalia. You're coming as, you know, Chewbacca, you know, or you're coming as, you know, like you're Captain Kirk. You can be native Captain Kirk, you can be regular Captain Kirk, who knows? It's entirely up to you. Cosplaying is so fantastic because it does break down so much of those boundaries. And there is a lot of pushback on that, too. It's like, oh, you can't dress up. Oh, how when I dress up like you, it's appropriation, but you can dress up. And it's like, no. What we ask when we're in our communities is dress up how you want to dress up. Try and avoid the tropes and don't color up your face. No black face, no red face, no whatever. Just
no
just,
white or no, no white face. Face.
Just be you. And if you do it well enough, someone will be like, hey, I recognize that. You don't need the other stuff.
But you can do Sith Lord makeup if you need
Absolutely,
to.
Absolutely,
right?
Because that's fictional and it's not necessarily. And I know I can hear people being like, oh, but the Sith will have a problem. I'm like, shut up.
There are only two of them, right?
Exactly. There shouldn't be that much pushback.
Here's a question then. You were talking about Native American Captain Kirk. Is it okay to be white Native American hero? Is that even allowed?
And what we think about with cosplay and Comic-Cons, it's really about, in some ways, fictionalized characters. So you're not coming as Chief Joseph. Mm. But if you were to do that, I would expect outside of, you know, no red face, but there are photos, there are whatevers, and wear the traditional clothing.
Right,
be
right.
That
okay.
character.
Yeah.
But it's also the genericized. I think that's the other thing that separates it out. Fandom means that you are very specific. You are going to come as Captain Kirk, Navajo Captain Kirk, which means you're going to have what Captain Kirk was like, but you're going to add a little flavor, a little spice to
right,
it, right?
Right.
So what happens, what we see at Halloween and with folks that come in as cosplay, when they're dressing as generic Native Americans, right? So it's like fringe and buckskin, and it's like, well, who are you? So that's not fandom. That's appropriation. I mean, honestly, I even give a bit of leeway to folks that want to come as characters from like the golden age of comics, like American Eagle. Wouldn't be my favorite. Wouldn't necessarily be the first choice that I would pop in because it's big headdress, no shirt, you know, whatever. But I was like, if you were that much of a fan and you were super specific and you could point to it and I could tell that you were American Eagle, I might let it by.
In fact, actually, you're hitting on something that strikes me as crucial, which is even if you're choosing the characters, some of the characters you named where it would be tricky is those characters actually aren't particularly strong characters.
Exactly.
The character itself is almost a generic trope. Like I'm thinking about
the
Pocahontas.
Yes, exactly.
I was thinking, well, what does Pocahontas look like? Pocahontas actually looks like every stereotype.
Uh-huh. I'm not going to say that I have all the answers either. You know, it's sometimes if you're coming there because you want to pick a fight, like you can see people that want to dress up because they want to pick a fight, because they're going to see how far it's going to push me. Somebody listens to this and they'll be like, oh, well, let's see how far he's willing to take this. Right, oh, see, right. You're a hypocrite. You didn't want. And I was like, no, if you're coming in a good spirit and a good heart and you're wanting to be a part of this, understanding the rules and listening to the communities, and you're coming in and you're dressing like this, you're trying to tailor it in a certain way, I'm not going to kick you out. I like fans. If you can point it
right,
to me,
right.
If you can tell me exactly what it is, may not be my cup of tea, but you're a fan of it. So let's figure out how we can either talk about it in a way that's respectful or responsible, or let me show you some other cool stuff in the world that you can be a fan of.
Be willing to be educated,
yeah.
Enlightened, I think, is critical there. I think that's a really positive note to leave things on.
Thank you.
For more about Native Realities, visit nativerealities.com. For more about the upcoming Indigipop X, visit indigenouspopx.com. Augmented Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, and we've had production assistance from Tristan Klum.